Right now, we're joined on the G&M Family Market phone line by our friend Patrick Ruby, who has written a couple of terrific articles on the NCAA basketball scandal, one on Deadspin and one at NBC News. Patrick, as always, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And you say that you see this investigation that's going on as an opportunity for schools and coaches and players to, in many ways, expose the hypocrisy of the NCAA.
Yeah, so here's the thing about the FBI investigation. It's told us something we already have known and known about for a long time in college basketball, which is that as long as this is a billion-dollar industry and as long as the winning matters to school, then the players who are talented, who make that winning possible, who make the $1 billion possible because everybody wants to tune in, watch it, or buy tickets to see them, they have value, and they have more value than just their scholarships. And we know this because the schools compete to get them, and the only reason they don't pay them more is because the schools also all agree to cap what they can earn as a limit of a scholarship, and now some small cost of living stipend. It's called amateurism, right? But we've known for just as long that when you have value and you put into place a prohibition or some sort of rules to restrain it, all you do is create a black market. You create an underground economy. And that's what the FBI case in college basketball is really revealing. Money is going under the table to get players to go to various schools, from agents looking to sign players potentially if and when they turn pro and go for the NBA. It's not really a surprise. I mean, this goes back as long as there's been college basketball. If we go back to the great UCLA John Wooden teams, I mean, there's the paragon of virtue in college basketball. Well, there was a booster named Sam Gilbert that behind the scenes made a whole lot of winning possible by taking care of those players. And ever since that, and even before that, we've seen quote-unquote scandal after scandal of players getting stuff under the table. So my idea is this, right? What if everyone, past and present, people who have been named in what's been released in this FBI report, people that have been investigated but have not been named or released yet, and all the people that the FBI hasn't covered, if everyone came forward and said, yeah, you know what? I did it. I'm a player and I took some money. I'm an AAU coach and I received some money. I'm a college coach and I directed the shoe company guy to send some money to player X to come here. If everyone involved came forward and said, I did it, this is how it really works, NCAA, go ahead and punish me, what would happen? Would the NCAA really burn down its own village in order to save it? Or would they have to admit these rules are freaking stupid and it's time to do something different?
Well, and this whole idea of amateurism is, it's quaint. It's almost, it's the same way when they discuss the Olympics as well, but even more pronounced in big-time college basketball. And I'm confused, other than this idea, which is a fantasy of amateurism, why would anyone really be opposed to paying college athletes when everybody else in college who has some sort of skill is able to make money from that?
So that's how I feel about it, too. And I always ask myself that question. And you know what? When you frame it that way, it's hard to actually answer. But I think when you talk to sports fans and you talk to people in college sports, I think you get a couple of reasons why people are scared of that. First of all, if you're a college administrator or you're Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, or you are a college coach, or you're even anyone in the system that benefits financially from the system, it's a pretty good deal when the on-field labor force can only collect scholarships. That means there's a lot more money available for you, who does have access to a free market, to get paid. It's not a coincidence Mark Emmert makes almost $2 million a year. It's not a coincidence that coaches make millions and millions of dollars a year, that strength coaches are getting over $500,000 a year, that these athletic departments go on building sprees and that they hire more and more and more staffers and that they create almost quasi-universities within their own athletic department. They have the money to do that. And like I said, you have a lot of extra money lying around. You don't have to pay your workers. I think any business would be really happy if they get away with that.
We're talking with Patrick Ruby, and so you've identified a problem, you've got a potential solution, and you go into great detail in your NBC News piece, and it's a simple thing. The best idea, you say, is to have no plan at all. Don't overcomplicate this.
Yeah, so everybody, a lot, not everybody, but lots of people will say, look, in theory, sentimentally, sure, I'd be okay with players being paid or getting a bigger piece of the pie, but how are we really going to do that? You know, how are you going to decide if the quarterback gets more in the left tackle or the point guard gets more in the center? And what's going to happen in terms of players wanting to transfer? Can players be fired? Do they have to pay taxes? And it's just too complicated, man. And then when I'm talking about Title IX, you know, it's great to pay them, but we just can't do it. Too complicated. And to that I say, no, it's not. And we don't need a plan at all. The best plan is no plan. Because you look at America's universities and colleges, they don't have a plan to pay anybody else on campus. Other students don't have a plan for how much they need to make or not make at their campus jobs. There's no centralized plan for paying professors, for paying coaches, for paying athletic directors, for paying university presidents. The market works just fine. We have contract law. We have law in case there's like fraud. We have lots of stuff in place to already help pay everybody. And that's not just college campuses. That's everybody else in America. So why do we need to put college athletes under some sort of special system? The whole problem with the current system is that they are put into a special system.
And how much money does the NCAA and its member schools get per year from their television contracts?
Well, it depends on, you know, a lot. And you know, if you're talking about football and basketball, and you're talking about all the various conferences and the tournaments and the bowl playoff series and the bowl games, you're talking multi-billion, right? You're talking college sports is probably somewhere in the like 8 to 10 billion range. I mean, it's around what like baseball is probably making per year. If you're talking just about the NCAA March Madness tournament that we're all about to enjoy this week, that alone is almost $1 billion a year. I think the value might actually be about to exceed $1 billion a year. It depends on what year you're in the big television contract they signed with Turner and some of the other networks that broadcast it, because it escalates over time. But if it's not $1 billion yet, it's really close. It's a lot of money.
You find it interesting that the people who seem to be in favor of a free market and believe in letting supply and demand dictate the course of things want nothing to do with that intruding in the world of college sports.
It's true. And I think, you know, it comes a little bit from that mythology of amateurism. You know, there's been 100+ years of people saying, you know, using the words like clean and dirty, like, oh, that program's dirty because players were getting money at their table. What makes that dirty? What's dirty about getting paid for what you're worth? Nobody else says that. There's also a little bit of this idea, well, if you pay college athletes, they can't possibly be students too, right? Well, BS. Everyone else, like most people on campus actually have jobs. I mean, like 80% of people in college right now in America also work. And I, you know, myself, when I was in college, I was an English major. I had a job at the student bookstore. I got paid for that job. No one said you're an amateur. You can't get paid to be around books. It was sort of crazy. So I, you know, I think people worry about that. And I do think also people look at college sports and they think, oh my God, if players were allowed to be paid, then Duke and Kentucky and Alabama and UCLA, they would have all the money and they would just buy up all the best players and there'd be no competitive balance. And to that I say, do you watch college sports? Because that's what happens right now. And I think what would happen in the future if schools had to bid against each other is that the schools with the most money would bid for the best players. The schools with less money, the mid-majors, would bid for that next tier of players. The small schools would bid against each other for the small-time tier of players. And again, it would look exactly like it does now, except less money for the coaches and more money for the labor.
Nowhere, to me, was the hypocrisy of big-time college sports more evident than in what happened last year with Central Florida's football team and their place kicker, who ended up having to leave the program because he had a very successful YouTube channel, and the NCAA told him he could not make money from that and still be a college football player.
See, that's what's even crazier about amateurism is not only do these schools get together and make an agreement that even though we're competing for all these players to work for us, we are going to agree to pay them at a fixed price. That already is illegal in every industry in America, by the way, including when the NCAA tried to do that with assistant college basketball coaches, they were destroyed in federal antitrust court because you can't do that. But also, like you talked about with this kid, Central Florida, you're not even allowed to make money from third parties. So other people that want to give you money, whether it's YouTube because you've got a successful channel, whether it's a local car dealer wants to put you in an ad, whether someone wants to give you money for signing autographs, or maybe just a happy booster, like, thought you had a great game, and like, I want to buy you dinner. Or here's an envelope with $500. Thanks for making my night. You can't do that. Everyone else in America is free to do that. It's completely ridiculous. And really, the only person or only entity that should have a problem with something like that would be the IRS, if they're not allowed to collect appropriate taxes on those transactions.
Well, Patrick, your plan makes so much sense that the NCAA, of course, won't go that route. But how do you see this going? How do you see this investigation playing out? And why, oh, why was the FBI involved in the first place in this?
So how it's going to play out, I think that given that it's already seems a little bit broad, I think that it will drag on for a little while. I think that the NCAA will react by waiting until it's all over and then probably trying to make an example out of one or two schools. It's definitely not going to go around nuking programs left and right. Like, that doesn't serve anyone's interest. It doesn't serve the NCAA's interest. There's the famous old quote about the NCAA from Jerry Tarkanian. You know, the NCAA is so mad at Kentucky, it just put Ball State on 2 years of probation. I mean, that's probably what we'll see here. You know, maybe Arizona or Louisville or one school will be made the scapegoat. But like we saw with the North Carolina academic fraud scandal, there's not a lot of hunger between mafia families to really punish each other. that's not going to happen here. Your other question is fascinating, though. Why is the FBI looking into this? I've asked that myself, and I kind of think it's crazy. And the reason is this. If you look at the actual charging documents, right, and I joked about this a minute ago, but now I'm being serious, there are no charges of federal tax evasion on here. There are basically charges where the theory of the case is that the schools are the victims, that they were defrauded because players that were ineligible under the school's own rules were brought in unknowingly to these schools and got scholarships. So poor Louisville, poor Louisville.
They're victims.
Is a victim because players that it directed money to come play for it to win championships actually played there. And so essentially what you have is you have the FBI, which works for you and me, which we pay for as taxpayers, which is supposed to enforce federal law, is instead enforcing NCAA rules. Newsflash, NCAA rules are not federal law. That's just stuff a bunch of schools got together and made up. None of us voted for that. Like, it's totally ridiculous. I think we're going to look back on this case the way we look back on the Balco case from the mid-2000s, where we say, boy, what a waste of time and money to have real cops playing sports cops.
Couldn't say it any better right there. Patrick Ruby, I read both his pieces. They are terrific on Deadspin and NBCNews.com. Patrick, always great talk with you. Thanks so much for making time for us today.
Thanks for having me.